And so if I were to travel back in time and give myself some advice, it would be like, breathe, enjoy this process, because this is a remarkable opportunity to be.
But would you have listened to yourself from the future?
I don't know. I might be confused. And then because I haven't had a haircut since February, I would also be like, why does this version of you have such long hair?
Hello, listeners, and welcome to Slice of Pie. I'm Hannah Genowine.
And I'm Claire Gilbert. We take stories from around Mary Lou Fulton Teachers College and showcase the awesome things that our faculty, staff, and students are doing to make our college and community a better place through principled innovation,
including all of the messiness that comes along with change making.
This is part two of our story on Spark School, a school within a school program at the Kyrene School District that came about as a result of a partnership between Kyrene and Mary Lou Fulton Teachers College.
Last time we talked about the initial meetings between both teams and how the original project came about, as well as about some of the design-related activities that led to the creation of Spark. Over the course of about 10 months, the Design Initiatives team held a series of design sessions imagining what the future of education could look like within the Kyrene School District.
This eventually became Spark. In this episode, we'll continue the conversations we had with Jennifer, Lisa, and Ben as they reflect upon the project as a whole and the challenges they faced throughout.
So as you guys continued to work through this project, what were some of the challenges popping up that you guys were overcoming through the design sessions, and how did you go about approaching those challenges?
I think part of it, well, one challenge really just had to do with the amount of time that people involved in this project had to give to the project, just by the nature of their day-to-day demands. So that's the design team, it's Kyrene leadership, you know, and this is not at all because they weren't invested in it, but just because there was so much else going on all the time. So, you know, I think the design process is fairly time intensive. And it's not something that, you know, it's not a planning process where someone from above is just going to make a decision and people are going to figure out how to implement it. Like, we were taking a lot of time to do all this research and to gather opinions and things like that. So I think perhaps we ended up doing more of that work than we might have thought at the beginning we would be doing. Like, we meaning our team, our design initiatives team at the Teachers College.
Yeah, a couple of interesting ones. I mean, the first is just the challenge related to managing and leading and supporting a project, particularly a place where, as a former K-12 teacher, that kind of never leaves you. It kind of like is seared into your soul in some ways of like those experiences for me teaching high school in Chicago in a good way and in challenging ways. But even in my prior role prior to coming to ASU and being at a higher ed institution working with K-12 partners, I think it's this sense of wanting to respect the partner's time, wanting to respect their autonomy, not wanting to be seen as an ivory tower that's imposing either a way of working or a vision or outcomes, particularly because it's their community and it's their school. And whatever comes out of that, they are responsible for and they are the stewards of. And so I think for us, that idea of being stewards in our own right of the project was, you know, when I say that's a challenge, I think that was a good challenge. I think that kept us in a place, especially with respect to something like principled innovation, where we wanted to be mindful of the context, mindful of our partners, mindful of, as folks who were kind of structuring the sessions and thinking about designing the design, so to speak, we took care fairly early on to say, hey, are there folks in this core design team who'd like to co-design these sessions with us?
I think another challenge had to do with figuring out how to kind of narrow the focus. Like, we did all this research, we did all these activities. There were a lot of, we were coalescing around some similar ideas. I think people had a sense of wanting it to be student-centered, wanting it to be maybe project-based learning or inquiry-based learning, or all these phrases that are kind of in the same family. But if you're actually going to open a school and create a curriculum and have teachers there, pinning down what do all those words mean in reality, and how do you operationalize it, and how do you create a school? And a big part of the design process is about iteration and prototyping. So I think something we talked a lot about is how do you prototype a new school? I think it took a while to realize that we weren't just going to launch a brand new school. It had to start with something smaller. And there had been ideas about like prototyping certain ideas or ways of teaching or learning or setting up a classroom within a pre-existing classroom. So maybe we would recruit some teachers who would like try out something in their classroom. But we realized that that wasn't really going to be enough, because the idea behind this wasn't just about curriculum, or it wasn't just about, you know, something that could be tested out in that isolated way. So what we kind of settled on, and this was more the district taking the lead than us in this, but was to have to launch a program within an existing school, but that would be somewhat separate from that school. So kind of using some unused space at a school site in order to try things out for a longer period of time, like not just you know, a few weeks in a classroom trying something out, but putting a prototype into place that we could really learn from and iterate on as it was going.
Did the way you guys approached working with Kyrene or your mindset or anything like that shift along the way as you guys were working with them?
I think one of the pieces that we maybe anticipated, but the reality was striking, is that when we try to shift systems, there are a whole lot of details that come along with that. So as we got closer to identifying what the pilot program would look like, there was a team of educators working with in the pilot program design, working with 100 to 120 students in third, fourth, and fifth grades. There's a teacher executive designer. So it's like a lead teacher or managing teacher role with an additional stipend. That job description doesn't exist on the salary schedule. So that was a piece then that required writing a job description, iterating on that, getting it approved by the governing board, identifying the funding source. Even just that one piece of the model took a lot of work and a lot of hours to be able to move that. So I think that was one of our biggest realizations, is that the ideas themselves are not unique, and it becomes very clear why we've ended up with this grammar of schooling in place for such a very long time. One teacher, one classroom. We expect kind of a certain number of kids. The teacher is the one who's driving the instruction. There's typically some underlying curriculum. We don't go to school during the summer. School is typically like 8 to 3. They're in grade level bands, right? There are lots of things that we kind of assume have to be part of school. And when we took that away, there was a real sense of freedom and excitement, and we could do this other ways that people loved. And then as it came down to like, okay, so we have all these great ideas, like we've stepped away from here's what it has to look like into here's what we want it to look like. And then the lift in getting those pieces to shift was, it took some energy and a lot of time, like a disproportionate amount of time compared maybe to what we expected.
Talking about taking away those boundaries, what are some of the more interesting ideas that people came up with at the time?
During one session, as we were thinking about what the physical space could look like, one of the principals that was on the core design team found an image from, it might have been China. I can't remember where he found this image, but that the physical space of the school was essentially a large glass like a donut. If you picture a huge where the center is like a park, and then the kind of donut is made of glass, right? So it's like this domed glass environment so that everybody can see what's happening elsewhere. And then this donut has like layers, right? So there's this beautiful patio at the top. It was this astounding, inspirational place. And this idea that continued to emerge was that rather than having classrooms that have, you know, 28 to 30-ish students and one teacher, how do we create a different kind of space? Because our behaviors are so closely linked to space, right? So this was Kyle's like, here's how we can really break away from some of our assumptions. Clearly, it was not possible to do that. During one design session, there was a student named Nick, and he said, what if instead of just reading about the moon, we could take a field trip to the moon? He was like, amazing, right? So as we started to say, like, what would you really, really want? There were some really big ideas that emerged. One of the other really big ones, and we haven't gotten there yet, the design team really wanted there to be opportunities for students to learn in all different times and places. And when we start to think about, again, the details of what does that mean when we put that into practice? Does that mean that the school building is open many hours? What are the implications around staffing and the cost for, in Arizona, air conditioning, right? There are lots of like small details around that. But that is an idea that I think was really strongly held by the design team, and that as we move through iterations, we hope maybe to come back to, how do we start to provide learning in different times and places so that learning is not only connected with a classroom during certain hours of the day.
One thing that I appreciate so much more around a project with lots of different stakeholders and folks who, whether we're in different boats or maybe we're all in the same boat, but occupy different roles or different spots on that boat, right? Is that with any project, there's the theory, there's the way you draw it up, or even if you sign, you know, you may even sign agreements and have a scope of work, and then the how it plays out always shifts. It's always dynamic. So I just think about these practices of principal innovation that become really important to us. Like, they're really fundamental to how we think through what we do, right? So reflecting critically and compassionately, kind of always, you know, one of the design thinking principles is this idea of wayfinding, right? That you're continually kind of thinking about where you want to go, scanning the landscape, kind of paying attention to your context. You're thinking about the different perspectives that are involved. And so, you know, they're very simple things, right? Like, through this project, we added new teammates who all brought different pieces to it. Lisa in particular, especially early on, was, you know, as a parent in the district. While this was happening, as we launched, like, this is, you know, in the context of Arizona, but also education nationally in the spring of 2018, like, lots of popular kind of teacher labor organization, particularly around Red for Ed and school funding, was happening. And so, like, as that's happening in parallel, the work of our college is standing up, not just this work in principled innovation, but the next education workforce is kind of getting established. And we're thinking a lot about this idea of the one teacher, one classroom model. So I think one of the things I carry with me, and having the experience of Kyrene, I think, like, gives me the confidence, or I think gives our team the confidence to continually adjust and not be anchored to, like, what we thought this was going to be, but to continually do this kind of metacognitive reflection on, are we where we thought we would be? And is that, you know, is that good or bad, but more like, what do we need to do next? What do we need to account for? Whom do we need to include? How can we continue to serve our partners better? And how do we continue to be good stewards with kind of this responsibility we have. So that mean in some ways, even as I hear myself say that, right, like, oh, that sounds like kind of platitude, like that sounds like kind of high-minded. But I think just the biggest thing that has come out of this experience is like kind of a pride that, like, I don't think any of us would have predicted the Spark School that has manifested or could have named that in advance. And yet by being responsive to the project, there are students in Kyrene who've had a great experience over this last year, and there's enthusiasm for what that will continue to grow into. So yeah, just, I think I don't know if it's a big change, but I think it's definitely kind of been anchored in my own thinking, which is, you know, be open to how things might shift by proactively kind of being reflective and critical along the way.
Kind of looking at the challenges that you guys faced. I mean, in designing a school for kids where you have this idea that you want it to be engaging and you want it to be new and exciting for students, did you guys feel the pressure of that? Like, but what if it's not? What if it doesn't work out the way that we hope it does?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think one challenge that we didn't, when we were in the midst of designing, we didn't think too much about, but then when it moved a little bit more into implementation, it was like, well, are people going to sign up for this? You know, when we launched the kind of enrollment process, not having a good sense of, is this going to have crazy demands and we're going to have like a lottery for the limited number of seats. I mean, I remember doing research into like lottery systems, and that didn't end up being necessary. But that part of kind of marketing it and selling it to parents and to students, was something that it wasn't a challenge in the sense that it didn't go well, but it was something that, you know, we had to think about a lot, and to make sure we were doing well. And I think that communication piece overall was something that got quite messy when the plans for the prototype school were launched. There were some community members who were quite unhappy about it. And I think that in retrospect, having a clearer communication strategy as part of our design process would have been better if we had kind of thought about that further in advance.
So I know you guys had your big how might we question that guided a lot of your design and whatnot. Did you guys have any other sort of questions that were guiding that you know, gut checked yourself along the way, thinking about like reflection and that piece? Were there any other sort of along the way questions you asked yourself?
Yeah, one of the really big pieces that design thinking aligns with well is thinking about the voices that are included and excluded. And so there's a tension in wanting to be able to have continual engagement with a group, right? Because they form relationships with each other, and having that shared experience means that as we're moving forward in the design process, that there's a continuity of kind of understanding and concept building. And that means that there is, you know, that represents that set of voices. And so those design team members included teachers and district leaders and students a couple of times, right? But it was still when you think about 17,000 students in the school district, it was a very small number that were represented there. So one of the pieces then that we did as we reflected on how do we get more voices incorporated into this process was with a design charrette during the summer. So there was a July in 2000, whatever year that was, 2018, there was a design charrette that incorporated more people. So there were more parents invited, there were business community members invited, and trying to get a broad representation of whose voices we're hearing there, right? So asking principals to invite students who maybe wouldn't typically be like, you know, on the A+ honor roll, like who are the different voices that we need to incorporate here? That was really something we tried to stay close to throughout the process. I think the other big piece in terms of reflection is being able to be, it's like trying to see around a corner in terms of unanticipated consequences. And it was a piece that was challenging for us. So as we rolled out the pilot model, and this was led by the district. So as Kyrene leaders rolled out the pilot model to the governing board and to the community, the way that we had described this educator team and the terminology that we had used left the perception that we were cutting teacher positions and that the student to teacher ratio was going to be significantly different than what we would ideally want it to be.
That sounds messy.
So it was not ideal. And then we ended up in these wonky discussions of like, no, we have this many teachers, community members saying, no, but that's not what it looks like in your communication, which ultimately is down to us, right? So then being able to hear that feedback and make those adjustments was really important. So that communication as the program rolled out, I think that was a thing we didn't expect. We kind of had this sense of knowing that because it's a design process that there would be iterations, but as we designed that initial pilot program and rolled it out, we did have a sense of like, whew, like now we're moving into this next phase of implementation, but it actually turned out that that communication process itself was full of iterations and adjustments because there were these unanticipated outcomes, like perception that we're trying to cut teacher roles, which was not the intention or the reality.
What were some of the learning outcomes for us as a MLFTC team moving forward from this project?
I think a big learning outcome was just about the importance of the relationship and the having a lot of trust and transparency. So spending time at the outset, getting to know people, really making sure you're on the same page, like trying to be as honest and transparent as possible. And sometimes that's easier than other times, you know, it sometimes really just depends on the personalities involved. But that seemed like one of the big reasons that this went well. And even when it meant that even when there were some hiccups in the process or things that didn't quite feel like they were going in the right direction, we felt comfortable in having someone from the team, depending on what the situation was, call someone up from Kyrene and just like address it pretty directly. So I think that was one takeaway in terms of that relationship being so important. Another learning has to do with the kind of communication strategy part that I mentioned a bit earlier. So I think that not getting too caught up in the design process itself prior to thinking about the other people that you are going to have to communicate it to and get buy-in from. And perhaps we were a little too closed in on the group that we were working with, or if not closed in, just that like we should have been thinking a little further in advance about how this was going to be presented and shared out with the broader world.
As we moved through the design process, we did well recognizing the adage that constraints inspire creativity. We started to learn to build a frame for people to build in and for people to work in. So if I say to you, what would be the most amazing meal you could imagine, right? It can be a little like, oh, there's so many choices, I just don't know. But if I gave you a constraint that was like, breakfast foods inspired by Italian fare or something, like you probably would have more detail in what you give to me, right? Rather than like ice cream and Brussels sprouts or whatever original thing might be, you'll give me more details. And so what we did well was then starting to think about how do we provide structure without limiting people's thinking. And so I think maybe one of my biggest learnings is that there's a fine balance in terms of getting buy-in and guidance from high-level leadership and allowing for voice and influence from the people who are on the ground doing the work. And that there's a constant toggle and back and forth between those two things. Both have to exist. And it's not always easy to find which place we should stand in at that time. And it's a piece that we have to constantly pay attention to.
Thank you so much for listening to Slice of Pie. And a special thank you to Jennifer Stein, Lisa Wyatt, and Ben Scragg for lending their voices to this episode.
Ben, Lisa, Jennifer, and Punya gave us so many wonderful examples and anecdotes from their experiences working with Kyrene that we had to cut a few of them for the sake of time. But we strongly encourage you to check the links in the show notes for more information on where this project started and what it became.
That's a wrap on season one. We have a couple of bonus episodes we'll be releasing for you in the near future as we get geared up for season two. So as always, stay tuned.